Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Oh, hang on. We're on Facebook Live now.
Uh-oh.
Everyone just stay calm. Just do your normal stuff. I'm going to play some music now, Tim. Don't panic.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We are just here to talk about the game we love and you love. And thank you very, very much for listening. I'm Tim. JB is right there.
Hello, Tim. And can I just say, it's lovely to have you back in studio.
It's I was here last week. It was Phil. Had a genuine... it wasn't a near-death experience, but it was genuinely very serious illness.
Yes.
Were you nervous and like genuinely worried about what might happen at any point?
When no one really knew what was going on and no one was telling me anything, and they put me in like isolation, and so everyone coming in was wearing face masks. Then I started getting a bit worried.
Oh God!
But when I got the diagnosis, everything's been fine.
We're glad to have you back in studio as well, Phil. We're all here together. You've got the full compliment for this, an episode. And actually, I just want to say before I get into that.
Oh, someone just pointed out Phil looks like Elliot Daly. And he does, doesn't he?
He really does.
So look I'm going for.
Wow.
Do I look like David Flatman in this jacket?
That's already been mentioned 3 or 4 times.
I know, I'm going to take it off in a minute. I'm just still thawing out because it's dead cold. And JB is... looking this is a different JB. What's going on? There's got to be a story why you're not in shorts.
Yeah, I just had my daughter's birthday, and do you know what happened actually? I had my daughter's birthday, and I generally think that 2-year-old birthday party should be like 2 hours, everyone clears off home. We did the birthday, then my wife invited everyone back to the house.
Oh, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. So we had kids running around, so I actually went down to the dungeon, and that's why I've started like, do you know, like the old gag. Oh, what are you doing on Wednesday? Oh, I'm rearranging my sock drawer, right? Like, I actually came back down here to rearrange my rugby shirts. That's why they're all like neatly aligned. So yeah, that's why I'm dressed in my party outfit / farmer's outfit.
Well, we have got a weekend talking about European rugby round 5 in what we're dubbing Rugby Brexit, as English Avicii clubs invoked Article 50 of the EPCR and will leave the European Champions Cup within 7 days to take back control of their domestic league and end the mass immigration of weekend visitors from the continent coming over to our rugby stadia and eating our pies.
Yeah, go on, get out of here.
An absolute disaster this European tournament is turning out for Avicii clubs. So we will definitely be talking about that, the whys and wherefores, getting into all of the games as well. However, it may well be Rugby Brexit, but we're going to be reaching out on Olive Branch and bringing lots of people onto the continent in March, aren't we, boys?
Yes, we are. If you're referring to what I think you are, which is the Tier 2 tour.
What else?
I cannot wait now.
How far away are we? It's 2 months now.
Yeah, I had one of those things that happens, do you know, when you panic really badly because you're realising it's only about six, seven weeks away?
Eight weekends from now, we will have done it.
Yes, exactly. It'll be over.
Exciting.
Yes, exciting.
Terrifying.
And terrifying.
People don't understand how much work it takes if you're going to do it properly. and if you're going to build things and a bit of production, and that, it is actually real hard work.
So yes, we are going to Madrid. Last year it was Bucharest. This year it's Madrid. Rather than getting tickets to go to the Aviva Stadium in Dublin or to Twickenham, we are going to spend about the same amount of money on getting ourselves several thousand miles away to another country and to soak up the Six Nations in the sunshine of Madrid, and also to watch some of the Tier 2 Six Nations competition. Last year we had, 100, 150 fans. This year we're probably going to double that.
Oh yeah,
easily double it.
It's over 200 now, over 200.
So you may well be listening and coming to join us in Madrid. If you are not, you still can. We've got so much planned for the weekend. Like I say, we're going to be going there Friday to Monday. Some people are going just Saturday, Sunday. Some people are going Thursday and spending a bit more time in the Spanish capital. But the point is this, we will have shindigs on the Friday night. There will be a whole day Saturday of watching Six Nations rugby at what's the Spanish tapas bar?
The authentic Spanish tapas bar is O'Neill's.
O'Neill's.
Yeah. That's all.
And then we will, on the Sunday, we will have a rugby brunch live podcast with very special guests / event.
Well, no. Yeah, we don't know if there's any guests.
No. Very special surprises.
Yes.
There's a very special surprise, yes.
Yes. And then we will be going to see Spain versus Germany in the Tier 2 tournament, followed by watching straight after full time with that, it will be Wales, Italy.
Yep. Can't wait.
So come and join us. Find out all the details on our Facebook page. Get your flights, which are still dirt cheap, to Madrid from all over the UK. And come and join us for a top weekend of rugby.
To be fair, I think you can only buy tickets now for this week, and then I'm cancelling it because we need final numbers on how many people are there, venue sizes, all the rest of it. So we're basically, this is it. If you don't have your tickets, you can come along. You can come watch all the rugby, but you just can't come to the podcast.
And there'll be some boys that are, there's a bunch of guys that are coming out there for a stag do. There's loads of guys coming out there with their dads.
Yeah.
An uncle. And so
you're going out with your dad.
Yeah, I am. I think my brother and my dad are coming out.
Wow, excellent.
Yeah, so it's like, it's not going to be just, lads. There'll be a bit of that if you want it, but you can just enjoy the city and check out a bit of rugby at the same time. Whatever you want to do, get involved. Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast on Facebook for all the information.
Excellent. Right, let's talk about rugby Brexit, I guess.
Yeah.
There's only Exeter, isn't there? Realistically, it's going to qualify.
Saracens have got a chance as well.
Oh my God, yeah. Saracens.
But it's out of Saracens' hands. Because if Ospreys win and Claremont get a losing bonus point or two, Saracens are out no matter what they do.
Why don't we talk about that game, actually? Just because we're here.
Well, before we get into any specific games, like, what's the... what do we feel has happened? What's different? Because Pro 14... So here you go. I'll give you a little stat. I know I'm doing Phil's job for him when I do this, but in 2010-11, there were two qualifiers from the Pro 12 in the quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. 11, in the year 11-12, it was five. Then it was two the following year, then three. So it was always a significant amount. Since they've had to qualify in the league and the European Champions Cup format was changed, in 2014-15, one side from the Pro 12 qualified for the quarterfinals. That was Leinster. In 15-16, can you remember how many?
15-16.
It was none. It was none. There was no. So for the first 2 years of the new format, only one of the 16 quarterfinalists were from the Pro 12. Since then, we've had three, and next week there could be five Pro 14 qualifiers.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What do you think's caused the change?
I wonder how much is to do with the league changes. Because we always said the first couple of years, certainly, when they went to qualification and every game became more important and the squads would have to get bigger and they'd have to get better at managing their players, we kind of expected the Pro 12, as it was then, representation to drop a little bit. And it did. Now, the squads are getting deeper and are getting better and are getting better managed. Look at the Leinster squad. It's probably the best example of it. They've almost got two teams that can that are equally as capable in the Pro 14 and in Europe. But I wonder if the new league structure has helped make it a little bit easier again.
The new league structure, as in the new
two-tier system.
I actually think it's a little bit deeper than that, or a bit before that. I think it's when the European Cup changed from the Heineken Cup, or whatever the hell it's called now, right? Because the qualification was simple. I mean, you know, the Welsh teams had some spots, the Irish teams had some spots, and, you know, everyone had their guaranteed spots. And because the English and French threw out their toys, it means that that league now is more competitive. I think that league...
Oh, I would say because the English and French teams rightly pointed out the imbalance, in fairness.
They were absolutely right. You know, they were absolutely right. So that league, I mean, this year of Pro 12 has been the best year of Pro 12 I have ever seen.
Pro 14 now, but yeah.
Sorry,
Pro 14. That's all right, no, yeah, that's confusing.
And I think it started. I think it started there. I think since then there have been other things as well, and that the other things I'm talking about are mainly the French teams sort of getting stagnant. They're more interested in playing like French teams against French teams, and the Aviva has had a very strange year. I mean, every team except for maybe Exeter and Saracens are in complete turmoil, or they're in a transition.
Well, even Saracens are not. You can't tell me that Saracens this year have been the same team they've been for the last three seasons.
We'll get to Saracens later because I have a feeling about them. But I wonder if the game has moved on a bit. I tend to think that isn't the case. To me, and maybe we should talk about this a little bit more when we talk about the Saracens game, they look tired. They look like Saracens playing at 60%.
They looked absolutely shattered in that game. I mean, do you want to get into it?
Shall we?
Because I've got a real question for you, Tim.
Yeah, go on.
You were there.
You were on the touchline. I was thinking exactly the same as you. Saracens looked knackered. How much of that was the physical pressure that Ospreys put the Saracens under? Because that Ospreys pack is... It's got a huge amount of experience. It's got some big, strong boys. And it's pretty well organised. But they're doing nothing in the league at all. Mm. But they look like they're putting Saracens under real pressure. And was it that? Was it the pressure from Ospreys, or are Saracens genuinely a shadow of themselves?
I think it's important to remember. So I think it was always going to be tight. The conditions when you were actually there, it was greasy. It was there was rain. It was, and I think both sides identified that it's going to be a territorial battle with the Farrell bigger, Webb Wigglesworth. That was going to be the game. It was kind of going to be who makes the most mistakes. Or who can squeeze penalties here and there. I think that, and certainly for the first 40 minutes, I think that was always going to be the case. Difference is, the second half started, and it was an entirely different back row for Saracens than the one that they selected to start the game.
Yeah.
You take Michael Rhodes and Vunipola, and then Jackson Ray pulled out in the warm up. So it was an entirely different. At one point, they had Jamie George packing down on the flank.
I know, with Tullifuera.
So I think. Saracens, when I looked at their bench, I thought they're going to win this in the last 20. That was my thought before the game, because they had George Cruz. Scout Berger couldn't even get on the bench initially when they selected it.
Yeah.
So I thought that's where they were going to win. It was going to be tight, but they'd win in the last 20. But the game plan was kind of shattered as a result. So, yeah, guys that would have been tired and exhausted and you might have chucked fresh legs on, they couldn't.
Tell me what you think about this. Mm. And this is not why Saracens drew, and it's not why they didn't win, but it's just a thought I've had. The selection of Will Skelton immediately rang alarm bells in my mind, because that Saracens pack, and Saracens as an organisation, they're so in tune with what they need to do. Everyone has a job, everyone has a role. Fundamentally, when you looked at Saracens 5 years ago when they were building this very special thing that they have, it was all predicated on hard work, effort, defensive grit. Skelton has come in. He's just not that player. I mean, he could make a fortune at top 14 level, but he's just not a Saracens player. And when I watch him, he is a big lumbering unit. He carries semi okay, but his work rate is just not high enough. And you know he's going to have to come off after 60. He doesn't fit that team. I don't know why he's there. I put Tolofua in the same bracket. Why are these boys even at Saracens?
I wouldn't put Tolofua in that bracket.
He's shed a lot of timber and is looking fit.
I think he's a good all-round player. The big difference I see with Will Skelton is his discipline.
Yeah.
There's times when you can just see he's going to give a penalty right here. He's going to give a bang, penalty, gone.
You're almost counting down, aren't you, for the yellow
card?
So, it did seem like a very un-Saracens and quite a conservative move to pick him. when you've got the second row options that they have. So,
but Kruis is on the bench. Why didn't they start him? I mean, why?
He hasn't looked himself. He really hasn't. But
yes, Kruis is an interesting one because he's been dropped from the England squad, having been a starting lion in the first test.
Yeah.
Crazy, isn't it? Absolutely crazy.
Yeah,
it's mad. But that's, I mean, it's nice to see in a way that scrums still have a real huge role to play in rugby union, and I'm always glad when it does, because you know, when you've been in teams and you can, there's been times when in the back of your mind, even though you don't say it to your teammates, you'll have the first scrum and you'll kind of think,
uh-oh,
we're going down here.
Yeah,
because it does have that bigger an impact on the game psychologically as much as anything.
Well, keep this to yourself because it's a pretty closely guarded secret. Saracens aren't very good at scrummaging. They certainly haven't been recently.
They got dominated by Leicester a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
They were dominated at times in this game.
Did they play Exeter recently and that didn't go too well for them?
I can't remember.
I seem to remember that. I seem to remember that, at least. I'd love to get the views of someone like David Flatman as to what is going on here.
I'll put my coat on and tell you.
Yeah. But there is something not right with how they're scrummaging. I mean, the Ospreys, you know, Alan Wynne-Jones and Bradley Davis are more than just names. Scott Baldwin is a quality international. Nicky Smith's good. But you would expect them not to absolutely dominate Saracens. And they did. I mean, they absolutely battered them.
That's where Mark McCall squarely put the blame for the result. He said it was the decisive factor.
I agree with him, because it gave Ospreys territory. It gave them opportunity for points. That basically lost. Didn't lose in the game. It prevented them from winning the game and might have cost them their place in Europe this season.
Now, one other question from me: what was the mood like at the final whistle? Because so Saracens were attacking. They turn over the ball. Ospreys break. They get the ball into Saracens' half, and they know any points they can win the game, and they can put it squarely back in their hands, knowing that they've got to go to Clermont, arguably the toughest place in Europe to go, not needing a win if they get a penalty or anything at that stage, yet they decide to kick it out.
Yeah, I was surprised by that.
Yeah.
I would have liked them. Well, bearing in mind that, and this hasn't really been talked about, but just before 60-minute mark, they had a penalty in a very kickable position and went for the corner.
Mm.
Ospreys, that is. And when you actually look at and think the game finished in a draw and Dan Bigger is a dead-eye kicker,
I did ask
Steve Tandy after that, you know, do you back that call? He said, absolutely, you back the call to kick to the corner. And then I said to him, and do you also agree with kicking it out into touch, bearing in mind you were just inside Saracen's half and you never know, you could have squeezed out a pen. He went, no, I trust the boys. If that's the decision they take, that's the decision they take. But Rhys Webb couldn't wait to get it off the field.
No, he couldn't. And he dummied, didn't he? He sold this dummy, like the dummy end of game. I thought, oh, awesome, this is going to be like the Montana fake spike.
Yeah.
No, he actually wanted to get it off the field.
Yeah.
I'd have, like, bearing in mind exactly what you say, they've got to go to Clermont.
That's
now,
it.
They could have gone to Clermont knowing, right, we're going to obviously go for the win, but still losing bonus point and we could go through.
Yeah, if losing bonus point and they're safe, they're through. They could have been in that situation.
So I was disappointed.
But
we should segue to, unless you've got something else to say on that.
Yeah, just one small thing, and you can talk again more deeply about this later. Over on my TV, on my little monitor there, I've got my little whiteboard. Everything's spelt wrong, so you know, we'll correct that later. But hashtag downfall 2018. One of the things which really worries me for England this year in their downfall year of 2018 is I think in the past they have relied on this core of Saracens players being so good, so dominant and so just iron-willed to win that now they're not winning so easily. This could be the most serious thing for England of everything.
Well, as we saw, the difference between Saracens without and with Billy Vunipola. One incredible stat. Saracens with Billy Vunipola.
Oh, do you know he's out of the Six Nations?
Out of the Six Nations. This is my point. Saracens without Billy Vunipola have a win ratio percentage. I can't remember exactly what it is. It's like above 85. And without him, 62% Saracens win percentage without Billy Vunipola.
Now,
it could be a couple of percentage points either way on each one, but it's roughly that.
That scale doesn't surprise me, because you're taking, I'd say, probably the single best number eight in the world, or certainly one of the top three for the past 3 or 4 years.
Mm.
out of a team. And not only that, it's his carrying. He does so much carrying.
Yeah.
And all round the field. He does it everywhere. So that does not surprise me at all.
So I think that's, I think rather than Saracens overall, just Billy Vunipola on his own, bearing in mind Nathan Hughes is also out injured, that is a huge hole.
So
who's going to fill that void?
Well, do we want to get into that now or do we want to wait?
Well, I'll tell you who it's not going to be. I don't think it'll be Sam Simmons. I don't think Eddie Jones wants him at eight.
He can't fill. I mean, for one thing, he's more than 20 kilograms lighter than Nathan and Billy.
Wow. Someone on Twitter, someone who I respect enormously, actually, Alex Shaw, was saying maybe Zach Mercer comes in and they get rid of the...
Well, I was going to say, let's keep it in terms of we've had a big sort of negative, a stuttering Saracens going, taking a big step backwards, and we should go jump to that game because that was probably the big positive of the whole weekend was the performance of Scarlets. But from Bath's point of view, I would suggest Benno Abano didn't do himself any favours.
No, he did not, did he?
The whole thing.
Henry Thomas, no.
Henry Thomas, no. Zach Mercer was guilty of making a lot of errors.
Yeah.
I thought he looked underpowered.
Yeah. Lightweight would be the word.
He was industrious and he was rewarded. He was rewarded for his effort with the try. But you talk about an international eight starting the Six Nations. I didn't see that. An incredible talent in the making, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I didn't see it.
Yeah.
As it was pointed out to me, Zach Mercer will be all right because of his pace, you know, or speed times mass equals power, so on and so forth, or whatever it is. And he's going to he'll run into space, not bodies. But what if there is no space?
Yeah.
You know, he's got a real issue. And I want to see him do well. I think he's a phenomenal player. I just don't think he's ready. I think you play him in addition to your heavy ball carrier, not instead of him.
Yeah. He's a nice option to have if you're in great condition.
Yeah.
You don't want to be playing him in mid-February.
No. You're
in great conditions, when it opens up, he's a great guy to have coming off the bench for an international team. In heavy traffic, imagine against the Ireland pack or against that Welsh pack. It's no.
So who? Who?
Do you know who I think is
going to... I'm really worried about this. Gary Graham.
The plumber. Bring on the plumber.
We've all seen his pirouettes now. Yeah. Pirouetting indefinitely in perpetuity.
Do you know who I think the most Eddie Jonesy heavy ball carrier is available to him? It's probably Ben Morgan again.
Or Waldrum.
Waldrum, yeah. Why not?
But, I mean, it feels like you're stepping back about 4 years.
I tell you who came back in and had a big... I mean, I don't think he's a number eight, but Dave Ewers was... You want a big unit...
He's a good
carrier, who can carry. Dave Ewers...
No one can fill... The only person that could fill that Billy-shaped hole is Nathan Hughes, and no one can fill it equivalent of Nathan Hughes. And Nathan is a step down from Billy, in my opinion.
Mm.
So you can't get it from one person. You've therefore got to look at the overall makeup of your pack.
Yep.
So you've got to get carriers elsewhere. So in my mind, you've got to bring in someone like Don Armand or Dave Ewers. It has to be someone like that. You have to play Laws, you have to play Itoji, and they'll do some carrying. You might even have to look at... So Jamie George starting ahead of Hartley, because Hartley's not doing much carrying at the moment. And even someone like Harry Williams carrying on the starting instead of Dan Cole, because every single carrier is important. The other one would be to have someone through the centres carrying, like...
Ben Tao?
Tao, or...
He won't be back for the first couple of weeks.
Or Tuolagi. And that's the... You can't make it up from like to like, so you've got to change the balance of the team if you want...
I mean,
that's a dangerous game to be playing.
Yeah.
And England are a pretty blunt instrument at the moment. Let's not forget that.
Effective.
And the argument is, of course, that what we're seeing is only the building blocks of the final picture in 2 years' time, and, you know, so be it. But if they're not bending the game line, they're not beating teams with their sexy patterns. I mean, they're not Scarlets.
No, what you got to remember is that 0-3 England side, who was coming off the bench in the back row? Guys like Joe Worsley. 50-60 cap, Joe Worsley hacking. Moody? Or was it? Worsley was starting, wasn't it? It was...
I can't remember his name.
Lewis Moody.
Moody.
0-3, the back row was Hill. Back and Dalali.
Yeah, with Worsley and Moody.
Worsley and Moody.
So, I mean...
As your options.
And then guys, I think it might have been Martin Corrie as well.
Yeah, would have been in the squad.
So those three... A lot of pedigree, and maybe it's a good thing for England when you look to the World Cup, but because what happens if Billy goes down, or Nathan Hughes and Billy are out for a World Cup game? Where do you turn? It's much the same, this thing we say. He's only had two hookers in his squad. What happens if one of them goes down? What happens if one of his two scrum halves goes down?
Yep.
I have never actually thought of that. He has only ever had two hookers.
In his 30 or 31 man squad, yeah, he's always had two hookers and two scrum halves. In other squads, he's then brought in other people for the wider squads, yeah. Like he broke. But, I mean, the scrum halves he's brought in guys like Jack Maunder, who's got half a dozen Premiership
there
starts.
Yeah, and this is where I'm going with the downfall 2018. is some of the selections are bizarre. I mean, how do you have a sensible conversation with lads about being the best, and I'll hold up my part of the bargain, but in the meantime, instead of being the best selector I can be, I'm going to pick Gary Graham. No disrespect to Gary Graham, he's just not Don Armand, right? If you're not picking Don Armand, you can't take yourself seriously as a coach. That is the end of it. And then there's all these other bits and pieces. Like, you know, he hasn't got the right mix of scrum halves. He's only played with two different hookers. Bizarre.
Well, here's another pressing problem for the Six Nations. Who's going to be on the bench, loose head prop? Because, again, with the Bath Scarlets game, which we'll get onto, I don't think it's going to be Benno Abano, because
nope.
He cannot. He's a fantastic talent and got so much potential. He's 23 years old. He's still got room to grow, but he was lost in a game of that pace.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. I don't actually think it's necessarily his fault that either.
No.
Because
he was part of a collective as well.
Yeah. There again, the scrummaging was his fault. So what are you going to do? Henry Thomas. I mean, Henry Thomas is. I know you rate him very highly as a handling prop, a very mobile prop. I think you're probably right on his day.
When he was 20 years of age,
yeah,
he was about the most. Him and Tommy Taylor at Sale, I just thought they are superstars of the future. And Henry Thomas has been injured for two years
and a couple of bad knee injuries as well. Yeah.
But
which
I mean,
is
like
good.
Samson Lee, not really renowned for running about, is he? But he's playing in this team which are playing amazing rugby. And yet he looked less knackered than the Bath props. Tom Dunn is going to be another guy who everyone rates super highly. Again, they were run off the field.
Yeah, they were.
Well, let's talk about the positive. Well, briefly, can you suggest who's going to be the loose head prop on the bench? Because if Elis Genge's out and Joe Marler is suspended, where do you turn?
Exeter. Well, all roads lead to Exeter. If you want to do something like this Six Nations... Go to Exeter.
Ben Moon and Alec Hepburn.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do a lot worse than them.
Yeah.
Is Matt Mullen injured at the moment? I've not seen him for a while.
I think he is.
Mm. Yeah. And then the next man down the line would be Ross Harrison, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm into that.
I'd go for that.
I mean, you could move a tight head over, but they're not exactly blessed with tight heads either.
I'm not too worried about loose head prop.
He's got a world-class starter.
Unless Mako gets injured.
Hmm.
Now, I was at the Bath game, some lovely... I had quite a lot of people come up to me and say hello and stuff.
That's nice.
And there was some gents that came and had a little chat, and they said, used to prefer it when JB was a Bath fan. Right, now he's defected to Sale.
I like Bath. I've not seen any pictures of this stadium yet, though. Apparently they've got some mock-ups somewhere.
They've got an architect on board now, so I'm waiting to see. I've not seen any of the mock-ups yet.
Do you think that's an architect's dream or nightmare to have that?
Ooh, I think getting through planning will be an absolute nightmare. So it's probably... It sounds really nice and sexy, but it's just going to be a load of red tape. They're just going to be resubmitting plans time after time after time.
And how do you appeal? Because it's like... A world, UNESCO world.
We're in Phil's world now. Come on, then, tell us how it works.
I mean, how do you appeal as a council? I guess you have to keep it in character. Like when it's not rugby days, you can throw Christians to lions. Or, you know, there's got to be some gladiatorial stuff going on there.
It's just got to be a sympathetic approach to the surroundings. The problem with that is you will be at the whim of the local council, who they will just take offence at. The smallest little details, so it'll be very difficult. I won't envy the man who has to get that who has to get that over the line.
Let's talk about the game then, because I've got to say it was an absolute privilege to be there for a number of reasons. One, as we've talked about all the time, it is one of the finest places to watch sport. The fact you're right in the middle of town, historic backdrop on the Weir, it's just an incredible place to watch sport. The Bath fans are a credit to rugby, as respectful, magnanimous. The Scarlets fans were a credit to rugby. They were such good fun and made it an incredible atmosphere. It felt like a football cup game. The atmosphere was that good. Todd Blackadder is a classy human being, and the way he fronts up and talks, I love. And then Scarlets, what can you say about the way they played?
They're amazing, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're actually amazing. I don't know, because they were missing two of their key men, and they were still absolutely awesome.
They were streets ahead in this game.
Yeah.
And they're missing two of their key players. They went down to 14 men and scored two tries.
Didn't they go down to 14 men in the final? Didn't bother them?
Yeah. And they just keep playing what they're playing. They keep looking for space, identifying it, quick hands, pace, away they go. They were brilliant.
I would love to meet the man who did the talent evaluation on Tad Byrne and go, you're just not up to it, mate. Hit the bricks, pal.
Did you see what... Because he was Leinster Academy, wasn't he?
Yes.
So Brian O'Driscoll, I think it was, tweeted saying, I could not have... Like, when he got released by the Leinster Academy, there's no way I could have told you he would turn out to be this player.
Amazing. Oh,
Liam Williams only broke through when he was into Scarlets. He got rejected by his region, the Ospreys, didn't he? He was out there doing a scaffolding,
wasn't he?
Until the age of 22, 23.
Yeah, you're right. And another guy who actually did the opposite to Liam Williams was Lee Byrne. Lee Byrne was starting fullback for Scarlets for ages. They just let him go for nothing. And then all of a sudden he re-established himself at Ospreys and ended up in Claremont. So it does happen.
One question. We've spoken about the England selections. Question for you, Jay.
Oh, God, is it about Welsh rugby?
Welsh selections.
Pass, don't know.
Either of you, whoever feels most qualified.
Tim.
Who's going to start at nine? Based on form, who should start at nine for Wales?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, so I know what the fans think in Wales, which is Rhys Webb is a god among men, and they have a good point. He's very, very good. And I also know that there isn't much love for Gareth Davis, because the thought is he isn't as clever a player. So, you know, I love Gareth Davis. I think he's a hell of a threat. Great runner. But the point is little things like, you know, he'll be 2-on-1 with someone and he just won't look around and he has the blinkers on. I don't think it matters which one of those two you go for, because they're both very, very good players. Rhys Webb probably has a bit more all-round skill. Oh, mind you, he's so fast as well.
I mean, Gareth Davis. Here's something I learned over the weekend. There was bearing in mind the role I have, I always want to get people's names absolutely bang on. And so you hear Davies. Basically, this Welsh fella said, mate, if they're Welsh, just say Davis. You can't go wrong. They're all Davis. Don't worry about this Davies. Just Davis. Just say Davis. It's fine.
Alan Wynne Davis.
So I think you'll get it. I think you'll get it right, like 8 or 9 times out of 10, if you say Davis. If in doubt, there you go. But it was one of those nights where everything stuck. Like, I think they'd win that game 10 times out of 10 playing the way they did. However, on most occasions, they might not win by that margin because everything came off.
Yeah, I don't know if Bath were a bit naive as well. I mean, I say naive. You don't see that kind of team too often, i.e. the Scarlets, right? But they have played them before.
Yeah.
And video cameras exist.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, like, is there something you can do to slow these boys down?
Probably.
Keep the ball when you have it.
I mean, yeah. Would it be wise to maybe use some coaching connections and put in a phone call to the coaches of, I don't know, Ulster, who did beat them?
Yeah. Now, so I think a big loss for Bath was Priestland early on. Because I thought Freddie Burns came in and some of his kicking was pretty aimless, just straight down Scarlet's throats, giving them exactly what they want, free ball with space in front of them.
Yeah, do you think it might be a mindset thing as well with Freddie Burns? Because he is a quite a flair player himself. So, okay, you guys want to play like that. Well, you know, we'll try and play your game.
I think the whole team did that. And I mentioned Zach Mercer earlier. He was at fault for... I say, I don't want to get this wrong. Apologies, Zach, if I got this wrong. It might have been someone else. But he gave an unnecessary 50-50 pass inside Scarlett's 22 that led to that incredible try. Mm. And there was a lot of that from Bath. Like, what are you doing? Keep the pill and squeeze the life out of them. But they were throwing passes they would never throw.
Yeah, people, it's kind of like a boxer getting into a fight with a guy that they just wants to swing, and they kind of match them swing for swing.
They get drawn into that kind of game.
So
they got their pants pulled down.
So that makes that table quite interesting.
Mm.
So Bath have gone from top to third,
mm-hmm,
because they've been leapfrogged by both Scarlets, who are now only in second place, and Toulon, who are in first place, with Scarlets hosting Toulon as the final game.
How did Toulon not go down to Scarlets? I mean, it just... If you had scientists analyse this game, you'd say, well, these guys are fat. And these guys are...
Really fit. Yeah. Really fit, really fast, really well drilled.
How does it work? I don't know. But there again, I wonder if that's the Toulon thing. They're going to keep the ball and just pound them into the ground.
That's what I'd be doing if I were Toulon.
Did you see there's loads of good stuff. Like, well, the crowd were amazing. The Scarlets crowd were absolutely amazing. The atmosphere was brilliant. There was an element where... I think, bearing in mind, they're second in the pool, they haven't qualified yet. You would think in some quarters like they'd won the tournament, the way that some of the reaction was. And I think it's great, and it was a brilliant performance and to be celebrated. It was quite funny watching all the Scarlets boys and Wayne Pivak downing a drink and chucking the ragdoll around in the dressing room that they won back. And there's a lot of people now saying, as they already were, looking at Rob Howley with a sort of furrowed brow, and then looking over at Stephen Jones, and then looking back at Rob Howley, and then looking back at Stephen Jones.
Well, do you know, if I was a Scarlets fan, I would feel very worried that when Warren Gatland hangs up his coaching whistle for Wales, it's going to be Pivak and Jones. I mean, why would you do anything else?
Yeah.
You're not going to go Tandy, you're not going to go Jackman, you might get a completely random guy from
New Zealand
that's never done in the past. But there again, maybe that is Pivak anyway.
But he knows the players, he knows some of the politics.
Yeah.
He knows Welsh rugby, so why not?
I just fear it might end up being 2 or 3 years too late. Because Scarlets... Well, it's just amazing, it's brilliant to see that... Some of the things we have begun to maybe accept, that running rugby might be dead a little bit, and it's, oh, that's just super rugby. That doesn't really work at top level. But actually, it worked in a massive all or nothing European Cup game.
These things go
in the middle of winter as well.
Yeah.
These things go in cycles, though. I mean, everyone will be running it, and then everyone will tighten up, and then everyone will be running it, and it's just the way it is. There's an antidote to everything.
But it was just, you talk about coaching and stuff, that was incredible skills, and then there was no one ever at any point when, say, Aaron Shingler went into contact. Scarlet's players always had the ball in two hands, trying to get the ball beyond contact to be able to offload, and then players weren't going in as if to hit a ruck. They were running the line, the assuming that they were going to be taking the ball in a pop. And actually, it made it really simple. It was amazing to watch.
Mm. Do you know what else was amazing to watch for all the wrong reasons?
Well, I don't know what you're going to say here.
Wasps Harlequins.
As an Ulsterman, that was incredible to
watch.
It
was like...
Ulster at top of the pool is unreal. There's
no way I thought that was going to happen before this weekend.
It was.
I picked both those games completely wrong.
I think about 35 minutes in, I texted our little rugby group saying, this game is a farce. I mean, it's literally... They were trying to throw it away. Both teams were actively trying to throw it away for the longest period of time. If it wasn't for Danny Kerr, actually... Danny Kerr was the only one on that field who wanted to win a game of rugby. Everyone else just wanted to go on the pub. They just wanted to toss it off. These two teams are unbelievable, and they deserve all the scorn that they get.
And it's so Quinsy to win when nothing is going to come of it.
Yeah,
well, I actually text Jay. Jay texted me saying, "Wasps are going to smash this." Like 10 minutes in, I said, "It would be the most Quinsy thing to do to win to a brilliant victory when nothing matters for you, when you're already out of the competition."
Well, I not only thought that, I backed it up. Put a fiver on when I just had a feeling that Quins had a sniff at things. £70 return. Thank you very much.
And as you pointed out on WhatsApp, Phil, it's very waspsy to lose when it really mattered.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so here is my Wasps. Yeah. My weekly Wasps beatdown. It's pathetic. It is pathetic. They're ahead. They have no heart. They are so... I mean, you talk about things that indicate that you care about the game. Number one would be defence. They've got the softest defence going. And I don't mean that they don't complete their tackles. I mean that they're not dominant, they don't collide. They simply don't care. At one stage, Kyle Eastman was basically chasing... Well, say chasing. Walking back after someone when he should have been sprinting. This team takes all their cues off Danny Cipriani. That is not a negative on Danny Cipriani, who I still think is maybe the best attacking player in the Prem still. But they only have one way to attack, and that's whatever Danny Cipriani dictates at that time. They also take their defensive cues off Danny Cipriani. and that's it. They are hooked on Danny Cipriani. I know you disagree with this because you disagreed with me before the show. I don't see what the coaches at Wasps are doing other than saying, hey, let Danny run the show, score as many points as you can, carry on going with the same game plan, and that'll be it.
I could not disagree with you more. They were very narrow losing finalists in the Avicii Premiership to the side that you think are the most structured and the best coached.
Yeah, that's right.
In the Avicii Premiership. They lost by 3 points, and this was a side, that side that played in the Avicii final, there would be no place, probably even with another three or four in, well, probably you could take half a dozen people out of that Avicii final team, and you still wouldn't be able to get Brendan Macken or Simon McIntyre, maybe Johnson's a bad example, but hooker. There's so many first choice players.
Sam McIntyre played in the final.
Off the bench
last year.
But yeah, what I'm saying, they lost narrowly at Quinn's, which is a place where Saracens lost recently, which is a place where Harlequins very rarely lose at home. So I don't think, and they lost by 5 points. The most frustrating thing is they were 21-12 up at half time.
Yeah, I mean,
like, close the game out
exactly. And where, where are the patterns of play? Where are the things that you do which a coach should demand in order to close down the game? But they carried on doing the same stuff. They carried on giving the ball away easy.
I'd be interested to hear what you think, Phil. But I don't lay that at the coach's door. That's just brain dead players sometimes.
And that is on the coaches, as far as I'm concerned.
Brain dead players is on the coaches.
Correct. It's all about teaching decision making, and you know, this is a critical part of rugby.
Rugby's sounding more and more like football, though. Oh, they're playing badly. Get rid of the coach. Get rid of the head coach.
No. In this case, I'm saying get a coach. Get some guys who are doing a good job.
Lee Blackett, he was being talked up as, you know, God, if England needed an attack coach, maybe they should go for Lee Blackett. That's what people were saying a year ago when he was masterminding this incredible free-flowing Wasps attack.
Yeah, and then as soon
And Di Young, people wanted for Wales.
Not me. I have been warning about this for quite some time. In fact, now I've got the whiteboard, we can actually write it down. I mean, I think even the Wasps head of media had a mention to you. Why is JB so down on Wasps? And this is why, because they just have one trick, and that's it. And when Danny Cipriani was injured, they had nothing.
Danny
left.
Cipriani didn't play much when they got to the. Danny Cipriani was not the Avicii Player of the Year when they got to the final.
Jimmy Gopeth was.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was the fulcrum of that team last year.
Well.
And how many games has he played this year? Half a dozen.
Okay then.
Eight.
If you have all
Elliot, like we've got Elliot Daly sat in the rugby dungeon over there.
If you have all these players, right, and you don't do something with them, like. Yeah, you know, the way that
all these players like Jimmy Gopeth, Elliot Daly,
like
Juan de Jong,
like Saracens,
Saracens eight defeats in their last 10.
What you can do is you can win once, but you can't win.
Saracens eight defeats in the last 10, without some of their big names.
Well, look, it's there for everyone to see.
It's there for everyone to see that if you take out loads of incredible players, you're not as good.
They were 24-12 up, Tim. 24-12
up. No, don't get me wrong. I don't disagree with you there, but I think you're drawing wild conclusions when the evidence is, as with Saracens, you take a load of amazing players out, they're not as good.
Of course they're not.
So you take some genuinely... You take Nathan Hughes, Elliot Daly, Jimmy Gopeth, probably their three best players last year, you take them all out of the side, and they can go to Harlequins and lose.
Yeah, and even when they had all of those players...
When they got to an Aviva Premiership final and lost by 3 points.
No, yeah. At the start of the season, their defence was weak. It has been weak for a long time now. Mm. How say you, Phil?
I'm still not sure on your point, Jay. I don't want to go into it again, but your point seems to be they're really weak because they've got no coaches.
No, my point is when they go forward, it's all predicated on whatever Danny Cipriani does, which is great when it works. They've got one speed, full speed. That is it. They are not coached to do anything else. They're not coached to play negative rugby. They're not coached to do anything else other than what Danny Cipriani is dictating at that point.
I think that's a mistake.
All right. The point about the defence is it just shows that they are a weak-minded team.
Yeah, I think that's where you're right. I wouldn't actually put the blame on the coaches. I'd put it on the individuals. I see your point that the coaches are controlling the individuals, but you look at that team, particularly the back line, and it does seem that there are some weak-willed individuals.
Yeah.
Wade, Eastman, Sippers, LaRue has been up and down like a yo-yo this season. And I'd say that's their problem more than coaching, because some of their coaching is excellent. Some of their set plays are excellent. Some of their exit plays are excellent. But their weak-willed is where I see it.
Mm. Well, Harlequins have the opposite problem.
Well, they're very strong-willed when it doesn't matter.
The opposite problem is they're so well coached.
Would you like me to tell you who coaches Harlequins?
Nick Evans is the best coach at Harlequins.
Okay, there's Nick Evans. Who else?
Nick Easter.
Who else?
Mark Mapletoft.
Who else?
Kingston.
Who else?
You said Nick Evans.
You're missing three first team coaches.
Three first team coaches.
Oh, Graham Rowntree.
Graham Rowntree. Who else?
Tony Diprose.
No. Who else?
Is he not there?
No, I don't think he is.
No, he might have gone.
I don't know.
A guy called Osborne and a guy called Adam Jones.
Adam Jones.
Right. Yeah. So Adam Jones. They've got more coaches, from what I can tell, than any other team in the Premiership. And furthermore, it looks like they all hate each other.
So is that what Wasps need to do, get a load of coaches that hate each other?
No. I don't think the coaches hate each other. I'm pretty sure that...
Oh, I see. It has a galvanising effect and it increases the will of the squads.
My view on Quins for this season is they've got a lot of very difficult conversations to have. If I was Quins, I would build the future around Lang and around Smith. That's my axis.
They are two talented players.
Yeah. Retain Robshaw, retain Kerr, and everybody else is up for discussion, including the coaches.
Well, Quins were never in this equation for qualification. So we should focus on sides that where qualification was and is a live concept. Like your Pride Ulsterman find themselves top of that pool.
Yeah, after I thought there was no way. So before the game, I thought there was no way they were going to beat La Rochelle. 20 minutes in, I would have put £100 on Ulster losing to La Rochelle. It was all La Rochelle. And then somehow they managed to shut them down. Part of it, I think, was very, very smart half-back play for a lot of the game. Did either of you see this?
I didn't, know.
Lea Leofano and Cooney.
His last game for Ulster, wasn't it?
It was his last game, which is devastating because...
Before the Beaver joins.
Yeah.
Of player.
Yeah, I'm not sure he's got the intelligence that Lea Leofano's got.
Do you not think?
Because some of Lea Leofano's and some of Cooney's kicking to find space, and this was the only real way that Ulster got territory for 80% of that game was very intelligent kicking, finding space, and then a very good kick chase, and putting pressure on that La Rochelle back three, which is a difficult thing to do because they're a pretty good back three. A lot of the plaudits should go to Cooney and Lea Leofano, alongside Rory Best, who he hadn't won a game in an Ulster shirt for something like 380 days.
I couldn't believe that stat when
what?
I saw it.
Yeah,
Because I saw that stat. I thought that must be. Oh, it's got to be wrong.
No, they were talking about it
over a year since his last win in an Ulster
2016
shirt.
2016 was his last win in an Ulster shirt.
That is staggering.
No, it shows you. It's like your point about the national captains not playing well for their club sides.
Oh yeah,
that's a pretty good example.
Yeah, slash not playing for their club sides.
Have I told you this, Tim? Have I told you my new theory?
You mentioned it on the pod. You mentioned probably it on the twice pod. Now. Yeah.
When Rory Best stands up and gives his speech to the Leinster lads about what winning means to win. What?
Yeah.
What have we been doing since 2016, Rory?
I tell you what, he put a hell of a shift in.
He
was a brilliant captain's performance.
I've seen highlights, and you could even pick up from that the effect he had on everyone around him.
He was everywhere. He was slowing balls down. He was turning balls over. Scored a great try. Putting big hits in. And I think part of that leadership did galvanise, because right across the line they were putting big hits in. Louis Ludic at one point dumped Victor Vito. And Louis Ludic is not known for his big tackles by any stretch of the imagination. But twice he brilliantly read La Rochelle attack. And that, it disrupted La Rochelle's typical game. So they started off this very impressive, powerful offloading game, bending the line, then breaking the line, offload. And Ulster eventually shut that down and put all of the pressure back on La Rochelle to go top of that group.
This Champions Cup pool stage is, at the moment anyway, next week everything could change in this pool, but at the moment it's like a microcosm of La Rochelle's season last year. Incredible, miles ahead, people talking them up as clear winners of the top 14, and then just flaky and fell away.
Mm. Well, they won 3 from 3,
yep,
the first three games. Now they've lost 2 from 2. And it is still in their hands, because they host Quins in the final game, which you'd expect them to win.
Yeah.
And if they win that, they go to 21 points, which will almost certainly guarantee them first or second.
Just while we're on this, La Rochelle, just tying it back, Danny Cipriani. This is apparently Danny Cipriani's new favourite place to go, is it not? They are favourites to sign Sippers in the off-season.
Really?
Yeah.
Sippers and Ryan Lamb fighting it out for the 10
hey,
spot.
I tell you wow. what, at least they're consistent.
They'll be doing some partying on the west coast of France.
I've been there, and it's a beautiful little town.
I'd love to go there for a game.
Yeah, and the atmosphere, oh my God, the atmosphere is incredible. So if Sippers is a man who wants an absolutely fervent crowd behind him and a kind of quiet, sleepy Atlantic coast town, then it's the right place. I'm not sure that's going to be Sippers' order.
Half of it he sounds like he'd like. The crowd on his back, yes.
I can see him going to some like newfangled team like the Vegas Argonauts or...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We'll see, but just before we leave this pool, James Haskell's red.
Yes, red. I mean,
so his was there definite contact between shoulder and jaw?
Well, something hit his head.
I'm 100% certain Jimmy Roberts does not get knocked out easily.
Yeah,
and there was shoulder on head,
and therefore you think red card. Straight red?
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
I think there was no arms. It was shoulder to head.
I'll tell you what I felt for him, though. I really felt for James Haskell.
There was absolutely no intent. There was no way Haskell wanted to hurt him. But it's a no-arm tackle that makes contact with the head. It is a red card.
The contact with head, I don't think's up for dispute. When you say no arm tackle, I think it conjures in people's mind, you know, those times when someone runs in and and like with the elbow or just charges with the arm
chicken
tucked
wing
in.
Or...
I don't think that was. I wouldn't class that as a no arm tackle.
He didn't. His leading shoulder. There was no attempt. His arm was by his side. There was no attempt to wrap that arm.
It looked to me like bad timing.
I think he was trying. I actually think he was trying to pull out. Now, I guess this goes to my point on it. I'm okay with it being a red card. James Haskell has shown a lot of class, in fact, by apologising. Well, one, on the field, not getting back in the defensive line and straight away checking that Jamie Roberts was all right. That was a lovely touch. Secondly, apologising publicly straight away, saying he had no, didn't mean it, and apologising. And Jamie Roberts showed a lot of class back, you know, taking it very well. Now, I don't like this being a red, but I totally get it. I really didn't like Joe Marler. Didn't think that was a red card.
That was a red card through and through.
Well, I disagree on that one. I think that players should be allowed to police rucks. But
street
anyway.
Justice.
No,
the problem is it wasn't even a rook. He was on the floor rolling away.
It was a rook.
He was nowhere near the rook.
I really hope that Tim doesn't ever single me out for some street justice.
Well, Jay, you are right now close enough to a rook to be liable for some street justice.
If you'd have watched the fantastic rugby tonight on BT Sport, you would have seen that I've got quite a good company in my opinion. Austin Healy and Lawrence Delalio both.
By the way,
Austin's good company for these kind of opinions.
I tell you what, right? First of all, I'll say I'm going to predicate it with this comment, which is I think Austin Healy's analysis is so good when he's on fire and he's actually looking at his TV screen. I don't think there's anyone better at identifying actually what happens on a field. What else is on fire is his Twitter feed. Like, he can't help it. Like, Austin, you're loaded and you've got a great job and you're really good at it. Why are you doing this?
I think I would say I noticed on Friday night, there's something about the European Cup. That means.
I think it's because Irish people are starting to watch him.
Irish and Welsh.
I actually think potentially it is the Irish even more than the Welsh that really don't like
well,
him.
Well, I think the Irish.
Not don't like him, but that really react to him. Yeah. Well, which is great to have a reaction like that.
Yeah.
I think the Irish are the new Welsh. I mean, like, Irish didn't really used to care about the rugby. It is now, like, the biggest professional sport in Ireland.
And let me link the two things together. So fine, Haskell red card, don't have a big problem with that. What I do have a problem is, well, one, firstly, I don't think Marler should be banned. He cost his team a defeat, and that's far worse. And
Marler should be banned. Haskell shouldn't.
I don't think Haskell should be banned. Well, how do you draw a line between
right,
the two?
So yeah, easy, right? So Marler quite clearly did what he did out of retribution, which is why TJ got banned later.
Not clearly. You could just say he was ineffectively or illegally clearing out a ruck.
Yeah, but
it was a rugby incident. It wasn't a swinging, just a punch off the ball.
Well, close enough.
And it was 2 minutes after elbowed in the head from Ioane.
Yeah, but that's not factual. That's if it wasn't Joe Marler, if it was Mako Vunipola, you wouldn't be saying that.
It's more than circumstantial, given the evidence from before.
Yeah, I mean, look,
you're prejudicing that because it's Joe Marler.
I'm prejudiced.
Because he got elbowed in the head, and then he needlessly shouldered TJ Ioane in the head.
Well, now the needlessly is
there is no way on earth
is not a factual.
Yeah, there
statement.
Is no way on earth, right? That
needlessly is not a factual statement.
TJ Ioane was in a ruck, and he cleaned him out.
He was 2 yards away from the ball.
And what if we went back through Marler's history of like shinning people in the head and all the rest of it? Like, you can't. I love Marler.
The head made contact with his shin.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was an irresponsible place to put his head, JB.
Yeah, Marler, as far as I'm concerned, gets his ban. He'll like it, Lumpet, and he'll be fine.
You can't draw a distinction though between that and Haskell. You can't say ban for Marler, no ban for Haskell.
Premeditated.
I mean, look, if Marler jumped up right with a horrified look on his face, waving over like the medic, saying, "Oh, I had too much grass in my studs and I slipped when trying to clear out the road." I go, "Do you know what? Maybe, just maybe, he wasn't trying to put his shoulder into his head." And that's how I feel about Haskell. The way he reacted, there was no way James Haskell wanted to do what he did to Jamie Roberts. They probably know each other well off the field. And you just, it's different.
Well, that's not how like legal type decisions are made by being prejudicial about your what you're alleging the intent was.
I'm making the decision.
Well, yeah, okay, you're making the decision. I'm saying you can't, but I'm saying neither I think should be banned. Haskell contributed to his team losing a game, which is massively. I don't think Haskell should be selected for the England Six Nations squad on form. But I think a lot of the guy, and I don't think that this is the reason why he shouldn't have that opportunity. And I think likewise for Marler. But tying what you were talking about with the Irish people on Twitter, and it's not just Irish; it's happening a lot more. And
mostly Irish, yeah.
With everyone, is it's becoming really ugly. The way people talk about rugby incidents is becoming really ugly.
So this I do agree with.
The outrage is hilarious. I mean, there are some ex-players that will describe themselves as feeling sick after seeing a certain incident. Of course, they don't really feel sick. They're just playing to the stereotype, which Tim is kind of pointing out there. This new, that's awful. I mean, this isn't how the game is played. Yeah, if you watched the game 10 years ago, the very same people would be cheering and clapping if an actual fight broke out, or if someone did get absolutely nailed.
The phrase "it's a disgrace." Give him a life ban. These sort of comments are being chucked around more and more, and it's not because we're better than that. We are better than that.
I don't get the people who are partisan about it though, because I assume you love rugby to start with, and this is part of rugby.
Yeah.
You know, but just because it's a guy from a different nation or a different team, throw the book at him. Why? I want to see it.
Do you know what? I compare it to this, and we've talked about this before. Do you remember in football when suddenly the phrase started getting used by pundits?
You can't raise your hands.
Yeah, exactly. And then it started getting used by fans. Oh, you can't raise your hand. Which would mean that in football, a red card now gets dished out whether your finger brushes someone's cheek or whether you full-on punch someone square in the nose.
Yeah.
Both get a red card.
Might as well make it worth it if you're going to get a red card.
It's now.
Done with that.
So what I would say is now, and I understand why, and I'm not saying I'm not for safe rugby, as safe as rugby can be, but now, that phrase, contact with the head, is becoming a mantra like you can't raise your hand. So even when accidents happen, there's contact with the head. Whoa, there's contact with the head.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.